for the players.
I'm Ryan Betson.
I'm Max Cooper.
And this is For The Players, the pop culture as PlayStation podcast. With over like 50 years of playing PlayStation, like 15 years in that game to be compiled, I want to thank you for joining us in this PlayStation conversation.
This PlayStation conversation happens every Tuesday morning at 8 a.m. on podcast services, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify, and 9 a.m. on those YouTubes. If you'd like to take part in future conversations with us, you can come check out our socials, Facebook, Discord, Instagram, X. Those links can be found in the description below.
If you want to join the conversation as it happens, head over to twitch.tv/spopcultures. We can watch us record this show live, where you can jump in the chat and become part of the show. If you want to support the show, you can tell your friends, tell your family about this PlayStation pod. If you are listening to us on podcast services, be sure to give us a 5-star rating and a written review. Watching on YouTube, be sure to like, subscribe, leave a comment below. I endeavor to answer every single comment. And if you want to support us financially, you can at patreon.com/thepopculturists. Hello, my dude.
Not too bad, man. Yourself?
Yeah, not too bad. Not too bad at all. Got a nice little fresh haircut, so I'm pretty happy with that. But no, things are good. But Max, I've done something that I've been putting off. I've been always said it's too hard. It's going to take too much of a time investment. I know I'm going to enjoy it, but I
You
don't.
You finally wished your mother's happy Mother's Day.
No, we started watching Supernatural, but also that I too happy Mother's Day, everyone, all the mothers out there, and you, your big mother. Today. My lovely partner and I have decided to give Supernatural a bill.
Why not?
Well, the reason why not was...
Seasons 1 to 3 are great, and then like 4 to 9 are shit.
Then 9 to 14 are interesting. Mm. Well, that's the thing, because I've never got past 6. I think every time I've ran it, I get to 6 and something happens.
What season 6?
Couldn't tell you. Couldn't fucking tell you. So we started number 1 just before... And I'm like, that first episode, that pilot is like a banger. It's a really good pilot.
While they're doing that Monster of the Week thing, it is a banger. It's not until they started being like, oh, we've got some legs in this, let's do some long-form storytelling, that it kind of turned to shit.
And then, because they built the show to be about these long arcs, once the CW were like, oh no, we're only going to renew you for one season at a time, they're like, well, we can't... We've built this show on the idea of telling longer stories... Fuck.
So they started doing Monster of the Season.
Yep. But I don't know, because I honestly saw a clip on social media. It was from The Boys, where they had Jared Padalecki, Michelle Collins, and Jensen Ackles sharing a scene together. Little did I realize all three of them are on the same show again. It's the same
you,
as
and you realize that, like, the producer is Eric Kripke. The same
no, I know that now in hindsight, but like, it's very similar to when The Flash started, and the whoever was on The Flash writing The Flash, they were Prison Break fans, because just Prison Break cast members were rocking up everywhere.
Dude, they were all in Glee.
What?
They were all in Glee.
All the Prison Break guys were in Glee.
No. A lot of the people from The Flash were also in Glee.
Yeah. And like, so I'm like,
you just put in the chat, their favorite episode is the Scooby-Doo crossover. I like the episode where they go back to Stars Hollow in Supernatural. and they have a Gilmore Girls crossover.
Are you shitting me? Because I've not seen that. That would be hilarious.
I'm not shitting you.
Okay. You know what? I'm invested. When is that in the timeline? Like, how deep do we have to commit? Because, like, today, one of the things I've also been doing over the last couple of years is chipping away at The Simpsons.
It's in season 2.
Oh, awesome.
Season 2, episode 18.
It's been a while since I've watched Supernatural. So I'm glad that's up early. But yeah, I've been doing The Simpsons in the background as well. And I've chipped into season 16, which is I'm over halfway as it stands. But I haven't entirely got to episodes I've never seen before. So I'm like, damn, I'm like killing it. I've passed the, you know, the golden years of The Simpsons. There's still some really good stuff. Some rippers still happen. But yeah, Supernatural is a challenge. It's what, 14 seasons, like 22 episodes season.
You've picked a good time to start a new long TV series now that we're all going back into lockdown.
There's concerns of this new hantavirus.
Now that Australia is letting the people back into the country that have got it.
I like that we learned absolutely nothing.
Yeah. Good times.
Man, I don't need another fucking lockdown. But even then, I'm a fucking essential worker. I'm a support worker. Like, I'm still going to have to leave the fucking house.
I was classified as essential the whole time, too. It was great. My hours increased, but my workload decreased. It's beautiful.
Mine got more. Working in mental health was really a choice during that time. Please don't make me do it again.
Apparently, I've watched our stream 15 times in a row.
That
seems small.
That's just not enough for the many that we've done.
I literally have it open every time so I can look at chat.
Mm.
Go home, Twitch, you're drunk.
But yeah, nothing major to report.
Nah, not really. It's just, you know, been a week.
Yeah, so you've had Nanny K down?
It was my last week off. Mum's down. So I've just been chilling. I guess I did some pretty cool stuff this week, actually.
Okay.
Come to think of it.
Come on.
Okay. So on Wednesday, I had the opportunity to go up to Melbourne to a little bar called Arcane Fairies. Thanks to the team over at Power Up PR, on behalf of Devolver Digital, I got to check out a few of their upcoming titles. We played Dark Scrolls, which instantly pinged my interest. I'm like, ooh, pun and a game that I like that interests me. Dark Scrolls is a little upcoming Metroidvania roguelike Soulsborne style game, which is pretty cool. Got to check out a few of the characters that are coming to the game. Brutally difficult. My partner and I were the only people who finished the first level. And then we got absolutely stomped on the second level. Great fun. My partner got me killed more times than what enemies did, I feel.
Now, this is not your partner as in Ally. This is
someone. The person that I was playing with. Because although your bullets don't affect each other, you are physical objects for your teammate.
Mm.
And sometimes them dodging a bullet gets in the way of you dodging said bullet, and then you have to take the bullet for them. So there's a lot of jumping on each other's heads by accident and falling into pit traps by accident. And it was rough, brutal, but it was fun. It was fun. Not as much fun as the other game, which was Heave Ho 2. Did you ever play the original Heave Ho?
No, I didn't even know there was a first, let alone a second.
So essentially you play as a head attached to two arms, and the only controls are grip with left hand and grip with right hand, and then you can just move your arms. And essentially you just play through puzzle levels as you Tarzan swing through them.
Oh, wait, no, I have totally played this.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, no, so, I actually have played this. This is sick.
You know, They started it off with some super easy levels. There was three of us playing at the time. It does support up to four players. It was super easy. We were just going from the left side of the screen to the right side of the screen. Super simple. And then they're like, oh, let's add a puzzle element to it. And we'd have to get a key on the way through to unlock the door at the other side. And then they're like, oh, maybe that's too easy too. Let's make it even harder. And you had to place statues on pedestals in a certain order that was hidden from you. You had to find it in the level. And then they're like, maybe that's too easy too. Let's turn it into a cooking game where we give you ingredients and you have to build the meal. So we had to, at one point, we had to like unlock pages to free the burger pieces to build the burger and then ding the bell for the server to come in. It got pretty hectic. With four of us all trying to like grip each other, fling each other across the map, collect all the things in the required order. squirt the mustard in the correct, you know, location of the burger. It's one of those party games that is just as fun to be an observer than it is to actually play the game. So there's no release date yet for Heave-Ho 2, but Dark Scrolls does drop at the end of the month on PC and Switch.
Yeah. Now, there's no, obviously that's great for everyone, but there's, in terms of what we do here, no PlayStation dates for either of these yet?
Not yet.
No. But look, it's a cool opportunity to go fuck ass around, which is fun.
It was cool.
Because you were going as a representative of, not even us, you were going as a representative of Player 2. Padge, Huzo, and crew.
Seasonal Padge was unavailable to go, and I was lucky enough that he offered his place to me. And I just happened to be free because, one, I was not working, and two, Mum was here to look after my children so I could go gallivant and play video games during the day in Melbourne.
It's a good life that Padge lives sometimes.
It is. And then on Friday, I went and played more video games. I went and played I went to Time Zone. So it's like an arcade here in where we live. And for $40 on a Friday night, they have Friday Night Frenzies. For $40 bucks, you get one game of bowling and 4 hours of unlimited laser tag and arcade games.
That's pretty good.
So we got there at 6 and we left at about 9:30. And we had a blast. It was good fun. There was me and 3 other friends. Normally we have like our Friday night family dinners with this group. And I'm like, fuck it, let's all go out. Let's the boys go out.
So what were the choices?
So we played the Mario Kart arcade because there was 4 of us. A lot of the racing games do come in 4s, which was cool. We played a 4-player huge fuck off Halo game.
Oh really?
Fun. Yeah, it was kind of one of those sit down.
Oh okay, yeah.
We're a Warthog gunner type thing. What else did we do? Oh, we played a gigantic version of Hungry Hungry Hippos where we sat on the Hungry Hungry Hippos and physically opened their mouths, and that was
sweet. Okay.
Interesting to see 4 grown men do that.
It'd be a look, that's for sure.
And then obviously we hit the arcade, so a lot of basketball games, a lot of stuff like that. And then, you know, we buggered off, had some dinner, came back, went upstairs, played our bowling. The catch with the bowling is the lanes are about half the length of a usual.
Oh yeah, they're tiny.
They are tiny because they are inside of an arcade, but it was fine. It was still fun. And then we played one game of laser tag before we left, which I won. We played just a free for all with just the 4 of us. And it's your boy.
How committed did you get to the
I never stopped moving, but I did not run.
No running, no big rolls, big tactical shots.
You're not allowed to roll.
Oh, is explicitly no tactical roll?
No sitting, no laying down. Well, because you have to wear big bulky packs, and they've got obviously light sensors on them.
And so important shit on it, yeah, it's a good
point. If you just like roll, you just like crush everything. but yeah, it was good fun. We should do it again sometime. You should bring James. He'd have a blast.
Oh, man.
4 hours of fucking just running ragged.
Well, that's the thing, because I was about to say, is for his birthday, not last year, the year before, we did it at the Time Zone in town. Yeah, so I've seen, yeah, I remember seeing the bowling alley and all that. And so it's a stack of fun, and I haven't done it in a very, very long time. I immediately went to the Guitar Hero one. Because even though I have Guitar Hero at home, I always do it. It's horrendously out of sync. It's disgusting. Disgusting. I want to be like, yeah, I still got this. I don't have this on that version.
It was funny. When we were organizing it to begin with, one of the guys was like, oh, let's go to the driving range. I'm like, let's not play golf.
I did that. It was fun. I did that the other week.
I don't mind it, but like...
It ran a long drive.
It's such a long drive out there.
Yeah.
To come back because they like to go down to the one in like Drysdale. It's like a 45-minute drive to get there. But then after we wrapped at Time Zone, we went to Slate and played pool for a couple of hours.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I think I've joined you on a couple of times for Slate. That's a good place.
I didn't fall down the stairs this time, which was nice.
That's good.
The last few times I've been to Slate, I've just fucking ate shit down the stairs.
In the chat, Mute says, sure, lag response. Oh, no. Mute, you don't understand. Max and I have spent so much time with Rock Band and Guitar Hero over the years that we would actually be pretty decent at real guitar, but we just didn't do it. It did legitimately help me get better at playing drums, though, so that's pretty cool.
It is actually atrociously out of sync, though.
Yeah, it's so bad. The machine is fucked. Like, it's been treated very badly. Very bad. But the other one for me is the old Daytona. That's an arcade staple.
They have some other one that you have to actually, like, wear a seatbelt in, and then it just, the whole thing just fucking moves and shakes as you go through shit.
Well, that's just crazy. Whiplash. How's that fun?
It's actually not bad.
Oh, okay, cool. I'll check it out then. But outside of those games, like even in myself, like, my week has not been that exciting, I don't believe. Fuck, have I done this week?
I think I've literally played like one run of like Slay the Spire 2, and I think I played one game of League of Legends.
Well,
and that was it.
Well, yeah. let's get into the section about what we've been playing. But, like, yeah, you've been playing a bunch of arcades. That's where a big hunk of your game time went this week.
Yep.
And as you've mentioned, Nanny K's down, which has really helped you allow to, like, get some sleep, which has been lovely. But seriously, you've not been playing really anything?
No, nothing. Literally nothing. I'm looking at my last played games on my PlayStation because it's literally Astrobot and Rocket League, which means my daughter's been playing it.
Well, I have at least been playing pretty much one thing, and it is Pragmata. I have now successfully finished the game. Thank you so much. The biggest thanks of all goes to Capcom, because this game fucking rules. It is so good.
You're right.
Now, I think my time on it is like pushing like 15, 20 hours or something on my original run. And that's because I 100%ed every fucking level. Like, once I knew like when they're like, this is the last area, I'm like, all right, I'm just going to do it because I'm enjoying it so much. Go in, clear everything out, get my 100%.
Well, that'll help you in the end game, because the first thing in the end game is it unlocks more.
Yes. Yeah, this little secret room that has a bunch of little
training module
stuff things in there. Yeah.
And
so
every second one is like complete 100% all area, like each area to unlock.
Which is annoying though, because every second one I've cleared, and the other ones are like, oh, go and take on this boss, I guess.
Yeah, it's just replay, because they're telling you to go back and 100% the level. So they're like, while you're in there, go kill the boss again, because that boss has changed when you go back in.
Oh, that's cool. At least then I can just jump in and go straight to the boss area.
Literally teleport straight to the boss area and just go in. Yeah.
The only catch is, though, because I'm very aware that I'm not going to get the platinum on the game, because there is a trophy that is tied around difficulty, and you have to play it as lunatic difficulty. And fuck that. Like, that sounds insane. But everything else, I'm going to get, like, I can get every other trophy but that one.
Yeah.
And I feel that will be the closest that I can get to demonstrating my affection towards the game. And it's an interesting space. I've talked about it last week, and the week before. So my thoughts are kind of very much the same. It is absolutely Space God of War. It spoke to me for that reason. And what I'd imagine, like, I understand you didn't see it exactly this way, Max, but when I talk a lot about the power of like God of War as a father, you know, the dad to a son, a father to a son, it hit me very differently. So with like Pragmata, like, it hit me in a way, but as I don't have a daughter, I was like, oh, you know, I imagine this is what it would be like for Max to sort of replicate that, the experience that you have had as a parent. Obviously not in space, and your daughter is absolutely not a robot. And, you know, you haven't gone to the moon as far as I'm aware. Does that make sense? Like, because now that I can see it as that full end, I really appreciate that for it. As I said, not just here, but also on Dodge, Parry, and Roll, which will be up later this week. I love that Hugh's not an arsehole. They showed him being a sort of a reluctant father figure, but then very quickly turning into a happy to be father figure. Yeah, I thought that was really, really enjoyable. The gameplay's tight. I started playing with James, wanted to play it as well after he saw it. Now I imagine a little bit of is the influence of me being like, this game's really good. And then, you know, that my son desperately wants to like try play the games that I do most of the time. So probably a big part of it. But he was really enjoying it. He was doing it with ease as well. He was playing it on casual. But no, it's fantastic. I think. But what's really bizarre about it all is I would give, like as I said in the past, God of War 2018 is a 10. And Ragnarok in a lot of ways is a 10 as well, if we were ranking. Not just purely because of my emotional connection to it, but like it played really well and this and that. Like all parts of it to me are brilliant. Obviously, you know, there are some hiccups with like the UI and whatnot. Pragmata, on the other hand, is universally pretty much the same. But if I were to rank, I'd give it like an 8, 8.5. I don't know why. Because it's awesome. I'm really enjoying it, and I connected to it, and it played great. Like, there's no gameplay issues that I have. You know, there's no performance issues. That turns out I was running it on the PS5 Pro's 120 frames per second version without even fucking intending to. I was like, man, this game looks fucking fantastic, and it's running really smoothly. What is there a way I can make it better? It's like, oh, no, this is the best it can do. That is awesome. So I don't know why I would sit it differently.
You're biased.
That's the only... I think that is the only answer. It has to be, right?
And one game's a shooter and one's not.
Okay, that also plays a big part.
But mainly bias.
The Reverend Park, it's because they make the relationship a competition. In which... Because it's interesting, because like looking at that relationship within Pragmata, it is in Pragmata, because they make the relationship a competition. Would you agree with that, Max? Between Diana and Hugh?
I don't think so. I think it was more of that. I mean, without more context from Park, it obviously. Kratos and going back to doing the comparison that you were using, Kratos and Atreus obviously have that predetermined connection because they are father and son. Whereas Hugh comes into this as a kids are dumb, kids are stupid, the reluctant person, and then you learn that, you know, he's adopted and all this stuff, and their relationship kind of grows over time. Whereas that relationship between Kratos and Atreus was already there, even though obviously you could see that Kratos was growing as a father and becoming closer to his son as time progressed, they still had the basis of a relationship, whereas Hugh and Diana didn't, if that's what Puck's referring to, perhaps.
Yeah, because if I look at the relationship like... There, with God of War specifically, it is...
And the other thing was, like, to begin with, Diana was a means to an end.
Yeah. So, like, yeah, with Kratos and Atreus, it is... It's a story of two individuals wanting to connect but not knowing how to, right? Not having the way to get there. And I see Puck's answer in the chat. I'll run through my thoughts and then I'll read that. So, yeah, that for them, it was two people wanting to connect with a failure... to find the right language to do so, right? With Pragmata, Hugh, as I've said last week, he is not an asshole, as in he's like, kids aren't my thing. Like, he's not all belligerent about it, even when I, having seen the beginning of the game again with James, for him, he's essentially like, yeah, it's not my cup of tea. It's not as if he's like, fuck your kids, and like spits on them or whatever. He's just like, nah, not for me. And then you become to learn, you learn as to the situation as to why that is. And then when he sees Diana, his initial instinct is look after her, but also, you know, that she is useful. It's not as if, it's not disregarding them as a individual alongside their ability to assist him in what he needs. And I think as you play throughout and you're collecting the REMs, etc., and by doing so, you're building these little connections. You know, it does feel like you're kind of like, hey, here's all these things I've bought you. You love me now? That they are able to create a much more organic connection. And yeah, and it certainly feels a little rushed because of the length of the game in itself, but I don't think it's a painfully or too aggressively rushed. But all right, let's check what the Reverend Puck says in the chat. They've added, no, you're thinking wrong. In God of War, it's only relationship. You don't have to focus that. But the goal of Pragmata is not just to save her, but you got to get better at it. So as a player, it's a less natural relationship because you're focusing on a scored outcome than you are a story.
I both agree and disagree with that.
Okay.
I think in the beginning, yes, but I think there is a pivotal moment.
And they've also added, unimportant to how I respond. This is the best you're getting from me while I'm in hospital. Life took a turn. Oh, shit, dude, Puck, what? Well, thank you for taking the time to, chat with us even in this situation. Dude, I'm so sorry to hear. Shit. All right, well, that's in that case, well, I would have done it anyway because Puck's awesome. But, yeah, let's take his argument to the full extent. Well, where were you? I feel like I cut you off. Sorry, Max.
No, you're right. I both agree and disagree. So I think there is a very significant turning point in Pragmata where he does, where Hugh does become a lot closer to Diana than he realizes. Mm. And it's at that point where you're like, my goal is to now get her to Earth.
Yeah.
As opposed to, I'm in this to save my crew. Your whole perspective changes.
True. Yeah, he does very quickly forget about his crew.
But I think up until that point, I do agree with Puck. Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, no, that's a very, very, very good thing to consider. So we talk about the gameplay, right? The numbers side of things. When I originally started playing, when I was doing the hacking, I was very conscious of how I did it. Because I'm like, well, let's maximize the damage that I can do, which will then allow me to shoot better. Whether it be like subconsciously or just as I've kind of got into that, what's that expression? The ludonarrative dissonance, where I was like, no, I'm not even looking at how many points I'm getting from hacking or what time I'm doing. It's more of like how can I build what Diana does to complement what Hugh does, or how I like to play Hugh, and then how I like to play Diana. So I never actually thought, I no longer thought about her damaging her individual impact became a unified impact. I'm like, well, if I tie these nodes with, you know, these weapons, I can fuck up almost anything.
Yeah.
So it's that's a good point. But like, yeah, initially.
But how does that then differ than upgrading? Atreus's Talon Bow, or wasting your XP that you could use on your skill tree, upgrading Atreus's skill tree instead to make him more powerful in combat.
True. I do think the game has, and now it is an easy trope, and I know it's a really bad example because I'm talking about a game with a father daughter, but like, there's a story trope that's used in so many movies. Like, it's Fifth Element is pretty much the entire premise. The idea is that using those movies, it's called Born Sexy Yesterday. As in, the idea is this brand new individual comes in, they're all innocent, they're all this, that, the other, and then the male character gets to sort of live this macho, you know, sort of higher, because it's a whole thing. And it's a really easy way to build... to create bonds between these two characters, because anything that the male character does is immediately impressive to the other individual. And then normally because they're like, they look like Mila Djokovic or that fucking, you know, Summer Glau in like Terminator or whatever. But here, it's done using that method, but in a thankfully very less creepy way, if completely non-creepy way. So as you're building this relationship with Diana, you are then getting to be the introduction to things like the ocean and the beach and the, you know, which you get to do as a parent. But as a parent, we do those things over time. Like, you don't meet a kid suddenly as a six-year-old and be like, now I'm going to show you, teach you everything about the world. It's the beauty of being a parent, the beauty of a parent storyline with the jump of not having to be a parent.
But yes and no, because he himself was adopted. He's adopting this.
Exactly.
Child.
Yeah, exactly why I don't have an issue with him doing it, because why I think it's so easy for him to have, even though he was distant, he still wasn't a prick. He was like, I'm not going to hug you because, you know, I'm unsure about AI and I'm unsure about you. But once they have that hook, which is the adoption stuff that unifies them, brings them together, and then it becomes, I'm going to get to show you this new world, get to show you this, that, the other. It's a bunch of things at once that are very easy ways to get at you emotionally. And it's something that they don't do in God of War either. Like, there's not really... Like, Atreus and Kratos go through on this journey together. Like, Kratos has history of knowledge, but it's not as if, you know, he's like, come, boy, see, like, my Greek shit. It just happens, and he's like, oh, no, you know, it feels a little bit different that way. Does that make sense? Rather than these little gimmicky pickups. But maybe that's why it is. Maybe I'm just overanalyzing it because I'm trying to find the why I like this one better than that one. But like, even those things weren't issues as I was playing it. I quite enjoyed, finding the skateboards filling out that camping set of the REMs for Diana. I was like, oh, this is so awesome. And seeing it, to see those reactions, it's great. It's fantastic. Just like the game. It's brilliant. Front to back. Gameplay was great. I really started to get that hacking stuff down. I'm still going through the extra stuff, as I mentioned, doing the training missions. Some of them are really fun and easy, and some of them are fucked. Especially the ones that's like, take out X amount of things in, you know, however long, and then they proceed to throw like the gnarliest, most elaborate shit at you. It's pretty quite frustrating. But outside of that, I did jump back into Saros for a window of time. But one, I can't speak to it too much, mostly because I'm not the one playing it. But this weekend, my PlayStation has been, what's the word I'm looking for?
Commandeered.
Commandeered. Yeah, commandeered's a good word. Actually, probably the best word for it. As the latest DLC for 2 Point Museum has dropped.
Is there a reason why 2 Point's not on the other PlayStation?
It is, but because it's on my account, like, it's kind of like she's been playing under her account on mine, licensing things. I'd have to change primaries, which would then fuck up the PopC account, whole thing. So yes, but even then, she's at a point in 2 Point Museum where the game runs like asshole because she's made this too beautifully elaborate museum. Like, not in a bad way, because it works, right? And it gets the job done. She makes a good fucking museum. But it's like, you zoom in too much, the game's like chugs for a hot second. But yeah, so the DLC, the latest DLC came out this week, is called Artifact. Artifact is what it is, where they've integrated a bunch of art, so you can actually create an art museum, so, you know, you can go on expeditions and get, you know, 2-point-ified historical art. She's seen some more, she dropped some names in there that I kind of knew. There's like the chick that she likes, she has the monobrow.
I'm going to need more than that.
No, it's kind of a big thing. Fuck. My brain keeps saying James Franco. I'm like, that's not it, because James Franco's a dude. DiCarlo? No. Frida Kahlo. Frida Kahlo. I got there in the end. Yeah, Frida Kahlo. She likes Frida Kahlo. She's in there. They've got that picture, you know, the two farmers with the steak. With the, mm-hmm. you know, that thing is in there. I think she said Monet, that's the name I remember she was saying once. Not the Mona Lisa, the Mona Lisa is part of that. I do forget the name, the guy that painted that, Michael.
Dude. The American Gothic.
Yeah, that one, the American Gothic. Yeah, so like they've kind of sprinkled all the little two-point museumness over it as well. Additionally, because she hadn't bought it in previously, I picked up the other DLC as well, which was the fantasy one as well as the whatever the other one was.
The non-fantasy one.
Yeah, there was two other ones. Michelangelo, there they got that guy. But yeah, there was two other DLCs which she hadn't got. So I grabbed the zoo one, the one with the animals. So he created like a zoo museum. Picked them up for her because I was like, all right, well, he had such a blast. She got the platinum. She loved it. She enjoyed it. I can't let her not finish it. She must get the DLCs. With the Phoebe needs to chill out sometimes.
Oh, the Zoozeum.
The Zoozeum, yeah.
The Zoozeum.
Yeah, she's pretty bad at like just chilling the fuck out, and I want to be like, hey, just chill the fuck out. Play 2-point museum. That's the goal anyway, and I'm hoping it's working.
You know, fair enough.
Doing the right thing, you know, helping out the peeps. All right, well, speaking of helping out the peeps, let's get into the section we call Inform the Players. We tell you about what happened. That's right. We'll tell you whatever. This happened week in PlayStation.
Here's the news. Fuck it.
Yeah, here's the news. Fuck you.
Digital downloads hit 85% on PS5 and PS4. So, yeah, 85% of PS5 and PS4 games were purchased digitally on Sony's Q4 for financial year 2025, which ended the 31st of March in 2026. It was the highest single quarter record on record. The full financial year 2025 average was 78% digital, up 2% year on year. A decade ago, only 19% of games were digital. By the 2020 pandemic peak, this had risen to 65%. Despite the digital shift, physical sales still account for around 70 million units sold in the past year, which is about a 20% share. Analyst Daniel Ahmad noted that the 20% physical share still represents tens of millions of copies. The PS6 is expected to feature a detachable disc drive rather than a standard built-in one, catering to the shrinking but still significant physical market. PS Store DRM changes were clarified by Sony. One-time internet check-in required for refunds, but offline play still remains intact, so don't be scared.
Like we talked about this with the Dodge Parent Roswell. I am near exclusively a digital owner. Yeah, like I don't buy physical fucking shit anymore. I genuinely cannot tell you the last time I bought a disc. Now granted, a lot of it is because of the situation that we are in and the advantages that we have. But even then, like the convenience of it all, like we have pretty decent internet compared to the average person. Like I understand that, yeah, we are in like the prime setup. But it does also feel like where it is happening. Like this doesn't surprise me in the slightest. It does demonstrate that the physical people are certainly a very vocal minority. And although the DRM stuff from last week turned out to be a non-issue, it does demonstrate that people are concerned about their digital things as the world becomes more and more digital and we realize everyone's going to treat us like garbage anyway. So, yeah, it does mean we need to have things like DRM, like licenses, like all these digital checks and balances need to be better checked and better controlled sooner rather than later.
It doesn't
surprise me. What about yourself? Do you think much on this?
It doesn't surprise me at all.
No. But like do you try it again, the people that you know that game, what are they digital, physical, all digital?
I don't know many people that do physical at all anymore.
And you can tell, like, we go to at EB Games and went there this weekend to pick up some things from Mother's Day. And, yeah, they are more tchotchke shops than they are game shops. Although I did find an old copy of Shane Warne Cricket 99 on PS1 for Padge. Did contemplate buying it. But I did not. Mute in the chat jumps in and says, they're a physical player. Now, Mute is based in the US, and this is where I think it's a little bit different. Now, here in Australia, with our game prices being exorbitantly larger, a new release is, $124.95?
The RRP is $124.95.
Yeah, an Aussie dollary dues.
But so, I don't think I've ever paid more than $89 for a physical
game. Yeah, and like that's where the advantage that we have from a, which is weird that so many people we know and including ourselves, are digital purchases. When a copy of a game is that high and it's cheaper, as you said, it drops down to $89 if you buy it physically, but digitally it's the same price.
Yeah, but I'm spending like $30 of petrol on wear and tear on my car to drive to the local game shop to buy.
How the flying fuck are you driving to JB Hi-Fi, Max? Are you taking like the actual fuel? What are you doing?
You take into account like the fuel consumption, the cost of the rego, the wear and tear on the tires. You're probably spending that much anyway.
I feel like you've had to negotiate this with Ali before.
Not to mention that it also takes 30 minutes there, 30 minutes back. In that time, I've downloaded the game and I've been playing it for 40 minutes.
That's actually a very good point. Like, yeah, you are like in the burbs, but you are just a little.
And then sometimes you've decided that you want a game after the shops have closed, and it's either buy it digitally, play it now, or wait 12 hours. I then also have to get up and change discs. My PlayStation is not easily accessible. It's behind a bunch of screens. And this is easier to just digitize everything.
Oh, so I'm with you. I'm right there with you in this privileged life that we live.
Nothing upsets me more than when Hadley wants to play a different game on the Switch and I have to get up and change the fucking cartridge. And I'm like, why the fuck did I buy digital on Nintendo?
Dear God. Isn't that fucking how much times have changed?
Or when I have to switch the controllers and put the other ones on to charge and take the other ones off.
Even it is funny, like, I can even distinctly remember when the transition happened, even within the media side of things. And the last handful of games that we got as promo discs, we got a bunch with PSVR. Then we also, so the last ones that I remember were Assassin's Creed Odyssey and Resident Evil 7. Which one came out sooner?
That can't be right. We got 7 digitally, I'm pretty sure.
I got it on disc.
Did you?
So I remember getting a disc sent to me from Kat.
Did we?
We ended up getting a digital copy later. No, that was Village. I don't know. I remember having to buy it when I wanted to replay it. Because I don't know what the disc is. Either way, but like even in my time of doing this, like I've seen that transition. Like no longer are we having to wait for the post to send us a copy of the game to play. What?
I just searched for it on my thing, and apparently I must own it because it says I can download it.
Or maybe on are you on basic PS Plus again?
Yeah.
Oh, so that, okay, interesting.
Resident Evil 7 Biohazard.
Yeah. Either way, I remember getting
free PS5 up. Free PS5 upgrade.
Ooh. But yeah, so as I said, I've seen that change. Yeah, it's just weird. And it doesn't surprise me anymore. Nope. I'm a digital person. But you know what? You know what also didn't surprise me, Max? Well, it did in some way, only because the number was fucking huge. Bungie was a $765 million loss for Sony in 2025, Max, in that calendar fiscal year. Sony recorded a $765 million impairment on Bungie in its financial year 2025 results, representing a significant loss against the net income. Sony acquired Bungie in 2022 for $3.6 billion with the goal of guiding PlayStation's live service strategy. But The acquisition has caused more than value. Bungie's first game under Sony ownership, Marathon, has reportedly cost over $200 million to develop and has faced delays as well as art-related scandals, i.e. straight-up plagiarism. Despite the impairment, PlayStation's overall gaming profits have rose 12% year-on-year, up to 45% if excluding the Bungie gloss. Marathon was well-received by critics, but Steam database suggests that it has not sold well commercially, at least on Steam. The report suggests Bungie may face further redundancies or cost-cutting measures as a result of its financial impact. Max, you used to love Bungie.
Look, that's a big kick in the nuts, isn't it?
That's three Last of Us's.
It's three Last of Us's. It's the Last of Us multiplier.
Yeah, yeah.
And then some. I assumed that there would be a loss or an impairment from them. I didn't anticipate it being that high, though.
Hmm.
That's crazy. But they're still going to support Marathon, so they obviously see something there. Despite the fact that they're not making money, they must have some worth, because they've closed a bunch of other fucking studios down that they've purchased and bought in. So what makes Bungie so special?
Well, I certainly don't think there's anything that makes them special. Now, I said it at the time, and I stand by it now. I am still baffled by the decision for PlayStation to acquire Bungie. They were brought in with this prestige, this pedigree, that they could do no wrong in the online space. And even once they were purchased, it was a situation of they were already on a downward trajectory with Destiny 2 anyway. And even granted, like, yes, there were some wins towards the end, but everything since the final shape has been consistently underperforming. And even the track record leading into Final Shape really didn't give them anything to be excited for. Marathon as well is, you know, from those that love it, really fucking good. Have I gone back? No. Most because it is a multiplayer-centric game, where unlike something like Ark Raiders, where it doesn't impair me to play by myself without other people to play with, Marathon is certainly a much more difficult experience. And the only other major person that I would play it with would be like yourself, Max, but you have not been playing it, or like Padge or whomever. None of us have really organized the time, because I think a lot of us, the interest, the desire isn't entirely there. So the only thing that the only value, I guess, to put it simply, the Bungie can really offer is, wasn't that Project Gummy Bears a spin-off of Bungie Folk? Let me have a look. Let's do a quick check. Project Gummy Bears. Here we go. Project Gummy Bears is an upcoming online action video game developed by an unnamed studio within the PlayStation Studios. Prior to August 2024, the project was in development at Bungie. Yeah, there you go. So I think that's probably where a big part of their major value comes in. And unlike the PC initiative, which we were discussing the other day in Dodge, Parry, and Roll, I think we were in our show as well, the choice to step away from PC is certainly a loss of return. And it is a loss of still millions of dollars. But I think the overall loss of cutting off something like Destiny even, or Marathon, is going to be greater than that one like PC decision. So I think Bungie is certainly going to get a good slashing. I think they're going to lose some resources, and they've already most definitely lost their quote-unquote independence. But it will still continue to forever baffle me that this studio were given so much time and effort to discuss Last of Us Online when this is what they do and deliver.
Yeah.
But yeah, because like I said, my immediate thought is, I'm like, they were already. Bungie have gone through two other previous ownerships, and both of them ended up on like surprisingly good terms for Bungie. Like even with Activision, they were like, "Yeah, can you just like fuck off?" And you could take Destiny with you, just like fuck off. Is essentially the vibe we started getting out of Activision. I can't remember what the situation from Bungie stepping away from Microsoft was, but I feel it was similar. I could be wrong though. Paul James Games in the chat jumps in and goes, "Oh my god, is that the Max Cooper written media video game previewer?" Oh, that's right. Is your article up now?
Not yet.
We did discuss it earlier, but Max does have a written piece going on play2.net.au.
I know, crazy. It's baffling that some people will give this fool another platform to babble his shit on.
I've been saying that to both myself and you since I started. probably Tuesday, says Patch. But yeah, so what was the split with Microsoft and Bungie like?
So in 2007, Microsoft and Bungie announced that Bungie was splitting off its parent company and becoming a privately held LLC. And then Bungie had planned to reveal a new game the following year, but didn't. It seemed like they were okay, and then in 2010 was when they announced that they were entering a 10-year publishing agreement with Activision Blizzard. And then, so under Bungie's agreement with Activision, then any new intellectual property developed by Bungie will be owned by Bungie, not Activision, in a deal similar to that of the EA Arts partner program.
Yeah.
But they seem to have left on good terms. They just went, "Hey, we're going to be our own people for a little bit."
Which is bizarre,
and then,
right? Like,
within 2 years, they entered a 10-year partnership with.
it's interesting. Like, granted, I think they're in a much better position with Microsoft in that they had already, you know, they had given them their flagship character. Like, without Bungie, Microsoft wouldn't have the Chief. The old Master Chief.
Yeah. What was originally going to be an Apple game.
Yeah. And so, like, they're split. Like, maybe they were split and then they were, running on the smell of their own farts and just having the greatest time. So they're able to get into this 10-year deal with Activision, and then they very quickly realized that they'd bought a dud. And then PlayStation, for whatever reason, thought they'd pick up the sloppy seconds of the sloppy seconds.
I don't think it was Activision. Bungie terminated its... Bungie was the one who terminated the publishing deal with Activision
years earlier. Yes, but at the same time, if that were the case, if Bungie were the one breaking up the deal, Activision had no reason for them to go, "Okay, we can take Destiny with you." Like, that is an incredibly goodwill gesture, and I can assure you that there is very low chance of a contract that would allow them to take their IP with them if they were on the best terms. On bad terms. Well,
when was the... Bungie announced Destiny in 2013. So if they announced this 10-year publishing deal in 2010, it was still 3 years before Destiny even came out for them. But yeah, in Bungie terminated its publishing deal with Activision in 2019 after 8 years, and as per their agreement, Bungie retained all rights to Destiny.
Okay.
More self-published future installments and expansions.
Okay. I'll happily admit inaccuracies in there, but it seems too good to be true. But as did Bungie, certainly did appear too good to be true here, because that is such a hit. And I think it's probably one of the most, unless I'm wrong, which is very likely, I don't think we've seen actual numbers of the impact or degradation of value from a merger and acquisition on this scale. Like, have we heard like how much Microsoft have lost since the purchase of ABK?
Microsoft published numbers.
That's what I'm saying, right? Where like now we're seeing it. We're seeing firsthand that M&A boom has cost someone near $1 billion.
I think the biggest question is, would they have purchased them if they didn't have this apparent 16 live service games in the pipeline or decide to go down the live service path,
mm-hmm.
would Bungie have even been acquired?
Yeah. There's more rollover shit from the old Jim Ryan, I'd say. But at least we're rolling into a new future, Max. A better future, perhaps.
Well, maybe. So PlayStation's AI push has sparked industry debate. PlayStation announced its intent to use AI to, quote, deliver a cutting-edge entertainment experience, end quote, during an investor presentation. Hideaki Nishino cited the Mockingbird tool, which transforms performance capture into animations faster for first-party developers like Naughty Dog and San Diego Studio, and he clarified that this does not replace any real-life performers. GT Sophie AI provides human-like opponents in GT 7. PSSR 2 on PS5 Pro uses machine learning for upscaling to 4K. Sony CEO Hiroki Totoki stated that, quote, human creativity must remain at the center, and that AI is a tool to amplify, not replace, artists. The PlayStation Store will use AI for personalized content recommendations based on player passion. The announcement triggered social media backlash despite PlayStation confirming they are not using generative AI, highlighting the tension between investor-facing AI messaging and gamer concerns. Ryan, are you happy that your PlayStation Store will be even more curated to shit you like and shit you don't like?
Well, hopefully it means more bad simulators will come to the top, because that's probably what's going to happen. Look, this really demonstrates in a lot of ways is the immediate misunderstanding between, you know, computational AI and generative AI. So everything that they're mentioning there sounds to me like a whole lot like computational AI. But at the same time, this whole AI bullshit has muddied the water so heavily that they damn right people should fucking get them mixed up. Because the amount of people would be like, well, it's just computational AI, and next thing you know, it's some generative bullshit. At least by them blurring that line, collectively everyone's like, we just think AI and we think bad. It does jump a little too wide. You know, because we think about all the AI that's been in systems for years. But, you know, on the presumption it's not generative AI, sweet. Because, as I said, the PSSR 2 in the PS5 Pro that I'm using in my lounge room right now is using upscale AI technology. So I can't be too shitty, because it's but once again, computational versus generative. Myself.
Yeah, I mean, computational AI is fine. If it's as long as it's there to assist and not take the job of someone, go for it. If it makes their life easier, if it makes it so they don't have to crunch, if it makes them be able to do, you know, an 8-hour task in 5 hours so they can make it home for dinner with their family, good.
Yeah. Yeah, because like computational AI, because as Mute says in the chat, oh, that's a great way to explain. Absolutely. Computational AI just takes the data that you give it and gives you information from it, right? Like it does calculations. It's all this, that, the other. Generative AI is when you tell it to make something, where you go, here's this, make me a picture, make me a video, you know, and even then like make me a written post is in a very similar vein. But yeah, right, when you're like, hey, here's all this, find me a trend, find me this, create like a graph that does this. Like that is still generative AI, but it's working within the confines of the data that you give it. Like if you think about AI within a game, it doesn't pull from external information. It pulls from the information you give it and the information alone. Now, granted, generative AI is large language models that use from the information that you give them, but that information is stolen from fucking everywhere. That's the big major difference for me. And much more okay with computational AI. Generative AI can get mighty fucked. But yeah, sorry, Max, what you were saying?
No, I agree completely. Yeah, took the words right out of my mouth.
I just seem to do that a lot. I do talk too much. It's a fucking problem.
Like a generative AI.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, give me, yeah, I'm the human version of generative AI. I'm like, can you give me a 5-minute spiel on something really irrelevant? I'm like, sure. Here you go. The computational AI is already going to be so massive. It's funny. I was talking about this with Phoebe the other day. And I mentioned about the idea of like technology and how we have kind of weird this hit this interesting plateau, right? Where the jumps of computer anything really skyrocketed, I felt, in like the late 90s, nearly, you know, when from like the 80s through to it was like very exponential computer growth. But in the last like 20 or so years, it feels really sort of stagnant, right? Like, you know, think about TV technology. They have to create shit in order for you to buy a new TV next year because panels can't get much better. Panels are pretty fucking uniquely brilliant at this point. You know, same as your phone. Like, you know, differences between years of phones are so much less now because they've pretty much worked out all you can do with a phone. Like, this is the peak of what you can do with it, right? How much more can you really add? And I think in a lot of ways, consoles are in that similar vein. So even though we've got PS6 allegedly right around the corner, let's jump into that. Right now, Sony CEO Hiroki Totoki has confirmed during the quarter four financials of 2025 earnings briefing that neither the PS6 release date nor its price point has been decided yet. Totoki stated that Sony wants to observe market conditions before committing to a launch timing for price strategy. A major concern is that memory prices are expected to remain high in financial year 2027 due to short supply, which could impact the PS6 production costs. Totoki mentioned Sony is considering, quote, new potential ways to sell the PS6, end quote, and simulating different business models. Industry reports suggest Sony has been targeting a 2027 launch, though pricing fears up to $1,000 have been circulating. That's US, by the way. Leaker Kepler L2 has suggested it may be cheaper, closer to today's PS5 Pro price.
And sell the PS6 at a loss, and software is going up $20 per game.
Yeah, it's pretty much where it's going to go, isn't it? And it, look, we've discussed this on the show before. Like, you've never been an upgrader outside of new generations, so you've never jumped onto the Pro, and you probably won't. And if the PS6 is right around the corner, like, granted, we're in a different position where we'll probably try to get a hold of one because of what we do, but if we weren't doing the show, Max, you still on the stance that you wouldn't rush?
If I wasn't doing the show, I would probably stay on PS5 until they no longer make PS5 titles.
Because it does... Well, let's discuss that. Like, you and I have experienced, you know, 6, 7 different generations of consoles, whether it be from our youth as, this, you know, with the Nintendos, the Super Nintendo, through until now. Generations are different. They feel so incredibly different. And I think the artificial length of the PS4... The length of the PS4 generation initially felt artificial. But as we're seeing right now, and especially, as I said, with the stagnation of technological improvements, generations aren't 7 years anymore. They are 10-plus years.
Yeah, it's one of those things, and like you were saying before, I think even game design has kind of hit a plateau of graphical fidelity, and at some point we're going to be like, do we actually need a new piece of hardware?
Mm. And I think because the major focus, and this is it's a double-edged sword that the industry has created. With the focus on improvement from generation to generation has always been about what you can see. So it's all about graphical improvement, graphical increase. So once you are starting to hit the peaks of what you can do graphically, you have to then work, it should have been the entire time, working on the actual processing. And that's where the future is. The future of games is in higher frames, more computational power. So there's a lot more things it's doing in the background, like denser worlds, you know, more, you know, AI in terms of like characters in a city or races on a track or so on and so on. Like, that's where it's needing to go. But that's much harder to sell.
I can't wait till we get to the point where I can play a game like Skyrim and actually talk and interact with those NPCs through my in-game microphone.
Yeah, that would be kind of cool. But that is still generative AI. But it's based on the language, on what you input it, so it's a bit different. But that would be kind of, that'd be fun. That would be cool. Now, I don't know whether you've, no, you haven't put it in here. One of the things
What didn't I put in?
About GTA, GTA 6. No. It's part of the conversation in the...
Is that the weird crunch?
No, not even that.
Crunch there.
Is that the, essentially the guy that runs it, Take-Two, his name is... Yeah, it was. He came out and was like, "Oh, essentially, ostensibly saying, oh, we have just thrown money at them. Like, they have complete financial freedom to do whatever they need to do for GTA 6, right? So,
it's fun.
Strauss Zelnick, I think I want to say. Is it Strauss?
Yeah, because
Andrew House is EA. Yeah, I keep getting them mixed up. Yeah, Strauss was like, yeah, we have essentially given them financial freedom to do whatever they need to do.
Fucking Swen's the Larian Studios here.
Oh, it is too. So yeah, it's like to know that that's where you're going to see that level of creativity within a world. Like that's that idea of that game that you want to play, Max, if a Skyrim, but we can chat to the NPCs. I think the closest we're ever going to get to that kind of world is what we're going to experience in GTA 6. But it'll be a very long time for other games to catch up because no other studio has that level of financial freedom where they can invest, you know, all that level of money into one title and one title alone.
Yeah, that's fair. Well, let's keep going. I'm gonna skip the. Oh no, I don't need to skip the next one. Let's keep talking about GTA 6. PlayStation has begun actively encouraging its PlayStation 4 players to upgrade to a PS5 ahead of GTA 6's launch on the 19th of December. November, sorry. Emails have been sent to active GTA 5 players and PS4 users who have wishlisted GTA 6 on the PlayStation Store are receiving console notifications. Sony's messaging urges players to, quote, get a PlayStation 5 today, be ready for when GTA 6 launches on November 19, 2026. PlayStation 4 players are receiving the message, also get a QR code linking to PS5 system purchasing pages. Rockstar has stated the GTA 6 marketing beats will start this summer, our winter, suggesting that Sony may be getting ahead of its official campaign. GTA 6 is a PlayStation 5 exclusive launch. PS4 players will not be able to play the game without upgrading.
Yeah, from this recent financial call as well, it does appear that PlayStation will be the console marketing the game. So when you see any sort of advertising for Grand Theft Auto 6, you're going to see the PlayStation logo.
Yeah.
I do like they're essentially, it's just like you're trying to play this random game and then someone comes in and goes, hey, buy a PS5 and then kind of fucks off. Like it's very, very direct marketing.
Microsoft Clippy just comes in. It's fucking.
Hey, I hear you're playing a game. Yeah, would you like to play GTA 6 on PS5? You probably should. And look, don't get me wrong, part of the reason that I got the Pro, also because of the price change, but knowing full well the GTA 6 is going to be sick and I'm going to want a Pro to run it on. But we've certainly felt like the generation has been changing for the longest time and we're finally hitting most things, if not near everything, is coming onto PS5 rather than PS4. But, you know, a lot of smaller teams with less dollars are still releasing on PS4. Do you think this is kind of like, it's always going to have been GTA 6 would be the big kicker to get everyone over to PS5? Like, it's going to absolutely explode.
Yeah. I would imagine that when's it releasing? End of November?
November 19th.
So I would say from like...
Black Friday is going to have a lot of PS5s.
You know what'll do it? End of financial year sales.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
June, July, sales will skyrocket because everyone's getting, or maybe just after that, everyone's getting them juicy tax returns.
Hopefully.
and they're going to drop it on PS5s ready for GTA 6. Some people will hold out waiting for PlayStation to be like, hey, we're going to do a bundaroo. And then everyone will be like, okay, we're in.
Also, I love that that episode of South Park was fuck knows how many years ago, and I can never not say bundle. It has to be bundaroo.
Well, tell that to the Simpsons and fucking Dollery Doos.
That's very true. That's a much longer one both of them have become big parts of my vernacular. But yeah, I am very curious to see suddenly everyone jump to the PS5. I honestly don't know how people have not jumped to a PS5 already. Like, it's been literally 6 years. And I think that's probably very much why it feels like it's too soon to get a PS6 at this point. But GTA 6 potentially being one of the last biggest release on the console? Whew. Sure.
I can't wait for GTA 6 to release on the next three generations of consoles.
Oh, man, it's going to be so good. In like 2 years from now when we get the PS6 version of GTA 6. Ooh. Woo, get excited. But sadly, that game is a little while away. But let's get into the games that are coming out this week with our new releases. Pardon me, big burps coming out of my face. On the 12th of May, getting Call of the Elder Gods on the PS5. Reverend Park, guys, I'm going to sleep now. Thank you for tonight. No worries, Park. Dude,
well soon.
All the best, man. Reach out. Yeah, we had no idea of your situation. I'm so sorry to hear. Look after yourself, man. Yeah, 12th of May, Call of the Elder Gods on PS5. Directive 8020 on PS5. That is the latest release in the Dark Pictures Anthology. Keen to check that out. Nitro Gen Omega on PS5. On the 14th of May, 2026, Outbound, Road Out, and the Caribou Trail, all coming to PS5. And then on the 15th of May, you get Harvest Moon, The Winds of Anoth Complete. Don't buy it. Harvest Moon games have been ass cheeks. And Rugrats Retro Rewind. It is a digital, is a collection of a bunch of Rugrats games, and only the good ones. They did really go out of their way to avoid many of the bad ones, if you like Rugrats games. The only one I can think of is the one on PS1 that I played an unreasonable amount of.
Oh, yeah, I vaguely remember that one.
Yeah. But nothing really major. Directive 8020 is cool. Like, it's been a couple of years since the last Dark Pictures.
I like the look of Call of the Elder Gods. Looks all right.
Yeah, what is it? What's the steal?
I enjoy the Cthulhu mythos. It looks like a puzzle platformer. Mm. Or a puzzle game, at least.
Okay.
But, yeah.
Excellent. Well, there you have it. A much shorter week this week. Not as much news, and obviously, Max being busy, and I've only been like really trying to get those credits on Pragmata, really has limited the upfront chats of the show, which then in short increases and ends the whole thing. But either way, let's wrap this bad boy up. Big thank you to everyone for joining us once again. We are still baffled that after 438 episodes, people still want to come and hear what we have to say.
And if you want to keep hearing what we have to say, come and check us out. This PlayStation podcast happens every Tuesday morning at 8 a.m. on podcast services, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify, and 9 a.m. on those YouTubes. And if you have suggestions on future conversations for us, come check out our socials, Facebook, Discord, Instagram, X. Those links can be found in the description below.
Man, our segue game has gotten so much better. If you want to join the conversation as it happens, head over to twitch.tv/popcultures where you can watch or record this show live, where you can jump in the chat and become part of the show. If you want to support the show, you can tell your friends, tell your family about this PlayStation Pod. If you are listening to us on podcast services, be sure to give us a 5-star rating and a written review. Watch us on YouTube, be sure to like, subscribe, comment below. I endeavor to answer every single comment. And if you want to support us financially, you can at patreon.com/thepopculturists. But until next week, I'm Ryan Betson.
Max Cooper.
And that was for the players.